Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans, not just here in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, but around the world. If you're hearing my voice, I can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. And as always, we're going to start off this episode with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. Haas in a little bit of financial trouble. And by that, I mean they haven't quite been paying all their bills. Or at least they haven't been paying money that they owe. A little bit of backtrack. A couple years ago, Haas had a Russian sponsor. We're not going to name names. When Russia decided to invade the Ukraine, there was a pretty much a ban put on all Russian athletes, sponsors, all that kind of stuff. And at that time, Haas had their major sponsor was a Russian fertilizer company. They dropped the sponsor, but kept the money. They have been apparently getting past due letters in the mail. And this is, you can find this online. So essentially what had happened was when they made it, when they finished the last race, which, you know, they did not too well, or they didn't do too badly. When they finished the Dutch Grand Prix, Haas wasn't actually allowed to leave the country. The Russian company had asked the Dutch government essentially to put, not exactly sanctions, but to essentially like officially hold Haas property until they were able to pay back at least part of the loan, or at least part of the sponsorship money. Now, Haas got millions of dollars from this company, and they hadn't been paying back anything. So essentially, they took the money. And they didn't put the sponsorship. They broke the deal. They didn't put any sponsorship stickers on there, all that kind of stuff. So company comes back, tells the Dutch government, hey, you need to hold their property because they haven't paid us yet. By the end of the Dutch Grand Prix, the Sunday afternoon, a payment was made to the said Russian company, and Haas was actually allowed to leave the country and go to Italy. Haas is on a payment program at this point to pay this company back. They're in such need of money for this team, because like they're dropping sponsors left, right, and center. They haven't been performing like they need to, that it is reported that they need to do at least 6 more payments before the end of the year to pay back all of the money that they owe this Russian company. Kind of embarrassing. And the money's not, I mean, when you take that money away, when Gene Haas pays that money back, where's that money coming out of? Is it coming out of his personal account? Is it coming out of the Formula One account kind of thing? Is he taking money out of his NASCAR? Is he taking money out of his IndyCar divisions? Where is this money coming from? Will we see a significant drop off from Haas when they end up paying back the rest of the loan? Is this going to affect the rest of their performance for the rest of the season, going into next season, all this kind of stuff? Massive, massive financial question marks, all because they decided not to pay a sponsor back when they didn't actually do anything for them. Moving on, Logan Sargeant is officially gone. Williams, thank God, it was about time. They are being replaced by their F2 Academy driver, Franco Colapinto. It's wonderful to see Williams, amongst other F1 teams, actually following through with their Academy obligations. They've got junior drivers for a reason. They're developing the next future IndyCar, NASCAR, Formula 1, Formula 2 drivers. Like, they've got these programs set up to help, you know, young drivers get into the sport, find financial backing, become, you know, wonderful at the best thing that they can do. And it's just great to see that an F2 driver gets to get called up. And it's for the rest of the season. It's not just for one race or two races. He gets to do 9 races, 9 full weekends, including a couple of sprint weekends in a Formula One car. Now, Colapinto is not set to be in a Williams car next year, obviously, because they've got Carlos Sainz coming over from Ferrari instead. But this gives him a massive boost, gives him a lot of experience, gets him out of the simulator into some real life action, essentially, and just gives him that experience that he needs, that if, let's say, someone gets hurt on a different team, someone gets sick, someone can't perform, that he will actually be able to step in and have a proper chance of becoming a real F1 driver. And let's be honest, even if they throw him in on a weekend like this, where he doesn't have a whole lot of on-track experience, he's still going to do better than Logan Sargeant. As long as you, one, don't crash the car, or at least if you do, you don't totally trash it. And if you finish above, I don't know, last, you're doing much, much better than Logan Sargeant could the entire 2 years he was with the Williams team. He is a really good prospect. He's not absolutely destroying F2. There's not a whole lot of hype around him, but he is a very consistent. He's a very good driver. He's a very good choice to bring in for the last nine races of the season. This is only going to help both the team and the driver. And that's it, folks. That is officially everything you need to know in the world of F1. Let's get right into qualifying. We are at the Temple of Speed, or sometimes the snooze fest of Italy. We are at Monza. Really, really, really good weather. No rain. Realistically, there was a 30% chance on qualifying. It doesn't really affect a whole lot. No wind. Track temperature, though. This is something that everybody needed to pay attention to over the weekend. Full practice 1, 2, and 3. It wasn't too bad. It was around the 35 to 40 degree range track temp, which may seem hot for us. But, I mean, F1, the sweet spot is around about 35 to 40, give or take. It was expected to be a very long weekend or a very hot weekend in Monza. But these guys got out of the gate like, you know, just like a shot out of the cannon. The track was great. Track greens in a little bit harder on the tires. It's a little bit rougher of a track. It had been resurfaced, but it's still, they like to add that grip to the modern day tracks. It makes it a little bit more easier. Not more. It makes it easier for the drivers to get the track temp, to get the grip, to get the downforce, to make racing a little bit safer and a lot more interesting for us. You know, we're going to talk about Francisco first. He qualified 18th. Not super, super bad for his first qualifying effort. Full practice 1, 2, and 3. He was doing very, very well. He was showing that he understood the car, that he understood the concept. The track wasn't that difficult for him. And the only reason why he qualified didn't qualify out of Q1, took the last corner a little bit wide, hit some gravel. That did slow him down by a couple hundredths. And as we all know, in Formula One, that's literally all you need to go from first to seventh, or in this case, from 9th to 18th. Really good future for him. Really consistent in his driving. Yeah, it was just an all-around good qualifying session for a first-time F2 driver. Bottom five, I mean, not really a whole lot of shock. Yuki Tsunoda in 16th, Lance Stroll in 17th, Colapinto in 18th, both Valtteri Bottas and Zhou Guanyu 19th and 20th, respectively. Here is a perfect example of in full practice, 1 and 2, Sauber had a really good downforce car, super consistent. Track times, you're hitting about the middle of the pack. So they were going about between 13th and 10th. They were really, really showing some promise. They decided to do a couple of tweaks at the end of full practice. They added a couple of new parts. I think there's a modification to the front wing, to the back wing, and to the side pods a little bit. And they absolutely 100% upgraded themselves into a whole lot of nothing. They should have kept the old spec, but at that point, either you're last or you take your car out of Parc Fermé, you put the new parts on, and you're still last. So this is the perfect example of when the car is working, don't touch it. It's working well for the drivers. The drivers felt consistent. The drivers felt like they were fast and they could keep up, and they were. The times at one point, Valtteri Bottas was the fastest in full practice one. Don't fuck with the cars. But upgrades being upgrades, teams being teams, they want to go faster. They want to go, you know, more downforce. They want to beat those times. So they tweak a little bit. Unfortunately for them, absolutely 100% did not work. Moving straight into Q2. This was a very, very fast qualifying session. From first place to ninth, they were less than 0.8 of a second difference between those top nine guys. They were just absolutely on the ball. Lewis Hamilton in amongst all those guys, feeling really confident compared to last year or last race. He felt that they left a lot to be desired in the race and in qualifying. He wants to make the car faster. He wants to be more consistent, which all drivers do. In this case, he was definitely showing what he needed out of the car and out of the team. He was constantly in the top five for the first part of qualifying two. He obviously does make it into qualifying for three because, I mean, the Mercedes this weekend, they were just absolutely untouchable. McLaren, as always, they were just beasts everywhere they went. Both Lando and Oscar Piastri were not separated by a whole lot, and they were dominating everybody else. Ferrari also doing much, much better than they were last weekend in race trim and in qualifying. Teams working very, very well together. Carlos Sainz, all of a sudden, not out of nowhere, but he is definitely out-qualifying Leclerc. He's showing what Williams bought, essentially, what you guys have signed. I'm still going to be consistent. I'm still going to be really, really good, really, really fast. get as many points as I possibly can. On the flip side, showing Ferrari that, hey, I'm still with you guys until the end of the season. I will do my best. Here is my best. Look at me go. Alex Albon in the Williams also showing really good pace. A couple of new modified upgrades on the car. Alex Albon's been on the ball the entire year so far. As much as he's pushing that Williams to the brink, keeping it on a knife edge, really making this team develop a really good car for him. He makes it into Q2 as well. Really good session. Let's get into 11th to 15th. Starting in 15th, Esteban Ocon. 14th, Pierre Gasly. 13th, Kevin Magnussen. 12th, Daniel Ricciardo. And 11th, Fernando Alonso. Alpine, it's not that they had a bad weekend. They just didn't have as good of a qualifying weekend as everybody else. For an Alpine, it was a really good weekend. They were feeling really great. They had good downforce. A little bit of, what do you call it? A little tough to get around those slow corners in the Alpine car this weekend, but both drivers doing the absolute best they can. I mean, they didn't qualify in a really bad spot. They didn't just barely make it out of Q1. They put in some solid times for both Q1 and Q2. Expect Alpine to be in that mid-grid this weekend. Monza has a tendency to be really kind to Alpine drivers, so expect them to be, if not in the points, just out of the points this weekend. Stepping right into Q3, again, the weather keeping it where it needs to be. Alex Albon in Q3, putting the Williams where it needs to be. Making that statement that, hey, the Williams car that I have, the driver that I am for Williams, I'm here to be taken seriously. Makes it into the top 10, almost cracks the top 5. Now, you're going to hear where he ends up, and you're going to be like, well, Kelsey, he wasn't really near the top 5. But the time difference between the first and the ninth players are drivers, again, less than half a second. So these guys are so close on this track. Super consistent. No drama. Hamilton, again, really putting that Mercedes to work. Really showing where he needs to be for the weekend. The important thing for qualifying in Monza is that it used to be wherever you finished, it was kind of like Monaco. Wherever you started is where you finish. There's not a whole lot of room to pass. But what they've did is they've modified the track this season. They've extended the first DRS zone by a couple hundred meters, so you've got more of an opportunity to pass a slower car in front of you. It will hopefully break up the DRS train for the weekend, and it'll make it a little bit more interesting for us to watch and a little bit more interesting for the drivers themselves. So it is still very important to qualify in a nice high spot. That being said, you've got to compete with teams like Mercedes. You got to compete with teams like McLaren. You got to compete with teams like Red Bull and Ferrari. These teams are going to occupy the top 5, easy, if not the top 6. So for someone like Alex Albon to get into the top 10, and realistically, he ends up 9th. So it's not a bad place to be. He's got his work cut out for him, but the way he's driving, he's super consistent. He's very, very confident at this point. I do believe that he will get up in the points for the weekend. All right, let's get into the topic that we've all been covering. We've all been paying attention to, at least for this part of the season. Essentially, Red Bull versus McLaren, it's becoming a very one-sided fight. It is becoming a matter of time before Red Bull absolutely 100% falls apart. Checo Perez and Max Verstappen are absolutely doing the best that they possibly can. And at this point, at this stage, at this race in qualifying, it is not enough. By the time Q3 is totally done, Verstappen and Perez, obviously they're in the top 10, but they're not even in the top 5. Verstappen is 7th, Perez is 8th. No penalties coming to hit, so that's where these guys stay. McLaren is just walking all over them. You can hear the doomsday clock in the Red Bull garage going, when is this? It's counting down to when they lose the Constructors' Championships. Drivers' Championships, it's a little bit more in Max's favor as long as he keeps doing what he's doing and essentially offsets the points that Lando gets, because Lando is within striking distance. But he needs to have perfect weekends. He needs to pretty much win almost everything from here to the end of the season, which is not realistically going to happen. Max is going to keep that point gap a little bit in his favor. But if Max wins the drivers, it's not going to be by a massive landslide decision like last year. And realistically, Lando not only has to worry about Max, he now has to worry about Oscar Piastri, his driving associate. Because when you get McLaren qualifying 1-2, you know it's going to be a McLaren fight. They're going to forget about Red Bull. They're going to forget about Mercedes. They're going to forget about everybody else. And they're going to compete against themselves. And that's how qualifying ended up setting up. Here's your top 10. From 10th to 1st, Nico Hülkenberg in 10th, Alex Albon in 9th, Checo Perez in 8th, Verstappen in 7th, Hamilton in 6th, Carlos Sainz in 5th, Leclerc in 4th, Russell's in 3rd, Piastri's in 2nd, Norris is in 1st. George Russell is really showing his maturity and showing the fact that he will be the number one driver in Mercedes now, pulling out amazing track times to get himself into 3rd. He's realistically not ever going to compete with the McLarens, at least this season, but he's showing the rest of the grid that, hey, I can beat Red Bulls. I can beat Ferraris. This is where I am. Take me seriously. On the flip side, Ferrari, really, really consistent qualifying this weekend in full practice compared to next weekend. They have set themselves up very, very well for the race. They do have a new race trim. They've got some upgrades coming in that's very Monza specific. They've done this before. It's the home race as well. You don't want to mess this up. So look forward to a very, very exciting race for the Italian Grand Prix this weekend. I expect us to see some sparks, some drama, some fireworks by the end. It's going to be very, very interesting. But with that being said, qualifying is officially done. It is set. Let's talk about race day. And what can we look forward to on race day? We can look forward to 11 turns, 53 laps, 5.7 kilometers, 362.5 kilometers an hour, and the fastest lap of a 121 back in 2004 by Rubens Barrichello. This was not touched this weekend, although these guys were definitely hauling ass. The major story going into this is the track temperature. It got even hotter from the day before, from 2 days before, from full practice to race day. We are talking 52 degrees Celsius on the track itself. Now, what does that mean realistically? Realistically, that means that Monza is a one-stop race. Traditionally, you can get around 53 laps with one pit stop. That's it. You're done. With 52 degrees Celsius, it's going to force some teams to do some massive, massive tire strategy changes. You can see two, maybe even potentially three pit stops. Now, what are you going to use for tires? Normally, you go for a medium. It's going to be that nice consistency. It's going to give you that slower tire degradation. It's still going to give you that grip. A lot of teams that you're going to look at are going to choose between the mediums and the hards. Does this really affect how you get off the line? Yes and no. Because of the degradation, because of the temperature, you're looking more for tire longevity than anything else than speed and position. Tire longevity, you're going to go for the hards. You're going to be able to get at least 35 laps out of it first before you have to change to the mediums. Medium track life is about 12 to 23 laps. You've got enough life left in those tires that you can do a one stop. With the temperature, if you push the tires too hard, your hards are only going to last you about 20 laps. Your mediums are only going to last you about 18 to 20 laps. So 3 to 10 laps, well, mind you, it's a massive gap, anywhere between 3 laps short for the mediums or about 10 laps less for the hards. It all depends on how you want to drive, how much tire degradation you want to go through, as well as how much you want to actually save the tires. Beginning of the race, Red Bull is the only team going for hards. McLaren, Ferrari, everybody else, they're going for mediums. So automatically right off the bat, Red Bull is realizing their strategy for this weekend. And just the performance of the car is not up to standards. It's not up to actually competing with McLaren and everybody else this weekend. They've got to try something else. Will this work? Are they going to put themselves into a hole? I mean, only time can tell. Right off the bat, 3-2-1, lights out, and away we go. Super hectic, but very, very safe at the same time. Nobody hits the wall. A couple of guys hit the gravel, but nothing too bad. I've seen races with Monza where all of a sudden it's 3-2-1 go, and there's like five cars upside down. All of a sudden there's trash everywhere from these cars getting demolished. The only thing that was trash, again, in my opinion, this weekend starting, Lando starts on pole, another trash start from Lando, gives his teammate Oscar Piastri the perfect opportunity to catch up to him. Huge, huge pass in the first chicane after the long straightaway. Oscar Piastri showing some grown-up intention, showing some balls, passes Lando. They were so incredibly close to touching, but Piastri makes the move. All of a sudden, Lando's losing a little bit of momentum, all of a sudden drops down to third. It's not the most ideal race start for Lando whatsoever. Loses a spot to Russell, loses a spot to Piastri right off the bat, first corner. he's got to find a way to get these starts a lot, and I mean a lot better than what he has been. All of a sudden, lap 8, Yuki Tsunoda, he's done. He's done for the day. 8 laps into 53. He ends up retiring because he did get some wing damage. He did run into the back of a car. And then all of a sudden, Nico Hülkenberg kind of comes out of nowhere and gives him a slight little love tap. They figured at this point there was side pod damage as well. With wing damage, you can repair. With some damage to the car, you can tape it together to a very small degree and keep it safe. As soon as you have a hole in the side pod, your day is officially done. That hole will just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And when that hole gets bigger, it just slows your cars down. It gives it absolutely no downforce whatsoever. Makes it very unstable. So B-Carb ended up just calling it a day for Yuki Tsunoda. Unfortunately for him, really, really, really bad. Like, really bad start to the day. George Russell at the same time, pit stop, 8th lap as well. Wing damage for him, front wing damage. I think he came into contact with Yuki Tsunoda. That's why, well, and what do you call it? Not a direct collision, but kind of a, you were around, so you got involved whether you needed to or not type of situation. That doesn't necessarily kill his day. It also didn't make it any easier, but that just means that that Russell goes from the top three. He plummets all, because it was a slower stop, he plummets like all the way down to 14th. After 8 laps. So he's got some serious, serious work to do. There were more passing in this Grand Prix than I've seen pretty much any time this season. Monza has a tendency to either be, and I know it's kind of contradictory when I first said that it's hard to pass in Monza, but because they've extended the DRS zone and because these guys, they're not desperate for points, but the points race is very, very close within the top four teams. These guys are taking chances where you wouldn't normally see people getting passed. New track as well. A lot of these guys are carrying a lot of speed like it's the old course. So, our old track, because they're used to that. Okay, you can break at this spot, not this spot. New track, you got to learn it really, really fast. You've got to learn to brake a little bit sooner, a little bit, you know, more aggressively, not aggressively. There was a lot of kind of bump and grind, a lot of passing on the corners, a lot of guys cutting corners, giving spots back just because they weren't really used to this track yet. Perfect example, Daniel Ricciardo ends up grabbing a total of 15 seconds in penalties. One of them was causing a slight collision. He did end up cutting the corner. He didn't quite make it, so he ended up just cutting it short, which is fine as long as you give the spot back. Ends up getting into a little bit of a bump and grind kind of collision with another driver. 5-second penalty for causing a collision. It wasn't anything huge. Okay, so what do? You take that 5-second penalty when you're getting your new set of tires. Unfortunately for Daniel, he goes in and no one's allowed to touch the car. So he goes in for his first set of tires and there are so many engineers around him. One engineer forgot, touches the wing to stabilize the car. Literally, it was a 3-second hold. And then you can see the engineer going, he takes his hands off the car and he's so mad at himself because that 3 seconds equals another 10-second penalty for an improper, like not serving his penalty properly. So then he gets another 10 seconds topped on that. But because of that, he doesn't get points taken off his license, which is good. You're only allowed 12 points from crashes and dangerous driving before you get suspended. So a little bit of a long day for Daniel Ricciardo. He doesn't finish in the top 10, unfortunately. Was he on the verge of finishing in the top 10 if he had a good race? No, he would have easily been 11th, 12th, or 13th. He was having a very consistent race. Very speedy, good downforce, really, really good concentration. I would love to have seen him finish in the points, but a really good finish for V-Carb because in his world, he needs to do this best as he can. He still doesn't have a seat for next year. Now, that being said, V-Carb also doesn't have a second driver yet. So they may just want to put the pressure on Daniel Ricciardo going, hey, you still have to do as best as you can because you don't have a job yet, but then all of a sudden come back and sign him no matter what. Another driver ends up picking 10-second penalty. Nico Hülkenberg ends up picking up 10 seconds for causing a collision. I do believe he runs into Daniel Ricciardo. There was a lot of bump and grind to keep an eye on at the beginning of the race to the midway. Anyways, Nico Hülkenberg, 10-second penalty. Does not end up serving the penalty. He ends up just taking the time at the end of the race because either way, you can get really, really high and then get 10 seconds taken off. Or you might as well take the 10 seconds and then just kind of end up where you were going to anyways. So Nico ends up taking the 10 seconds at the end of the race. No additional penalty for doing that. It's totally the team's choice. You just have to realize that, hey, if you've got 10 seconds and you want to get points, you have to do so much better to negate that time penalty to see where you get. And pretty much from then on out, the story was nothing but strategy. And it was a strategy between two teams. And it's not the two teams that you generally think about. It was not the strategy fight between McLaren and Red Bull. It was more of a strategy fight between McLaren and Ferrari. Ferrari having a very, very, very good race. Both guys, Leclerc and Sainz, staying in the top five, staying within each other, being able to help each other out with a little bit of aerodynamic guidance, DRS, all that kind of fun stuff. Really, really good team strategy. Team strategy for Ferrari, they were letting Leclerc go long. So he started on the mediums. He did 25 laps on the mediums, and then they gave him a set of hards. Now, to do a set of hards for the rest of the race at the pace that Leclerc was going, there's not many people who'd be able to keep the traction, to keep even the tires on the car, to keep the downforce, and keep the consistency that he did. He ends up having an amazing about 5-race stint on those tires, and there was not a whole lot left on those tires. Really, really good drive from Lando. I mean, Leclerc. Sorry about that, folks. Really, really good drive from Leclerc. Really consistent. Carlos Sainz, again, he went from mediums to, or he went from hards to mediums. He did a two-stopper. Probably not the best thing he could have done. He probably should have gone from, but you have to use two compounds. So he went from mediums, then he went to mediums, then went to hards, I believe. He didn't exactly have the tire life that he thought he would have. Monza is really front axle heavy, which means those front tires take a lot of grinding. They take a lot of punishment. They take a lot more usage than the back end. Carlos's car just, has a tendency to chew through tires a little bit faster than Leclerc. He also finishes in the top five, just not quite as close as he wanted to. Strategy from McLaren, on the other hand, Lando and Piastri, team players. Okay. They're doing the team effort, making sure they don't crash, pushing each other really, really well. The only question that I had is they had pitted, and we're going to get into this. This will be the story of the race, but they pitted Piastri a second time, which I don't really think they needed to. They just could have done a one pit stop for him and he would have been fine. We'll talk about that at the story of the race at the end when I tell you who won. Red Bull strategy, they were just not in it. They were struggling from start to finish to just trying to keep up. Again, they had a strategy that didn't make any sense whatsoever. Max went on a two-stopper. I don't think they really needed to. A one-stopper could have done him, again, much more credit, would have gotten him a lot higher in the points, would have negated how much McLaren gained on them. But at the same time, it's just kind of one of those strategies of why. That doesn't make any sense. I know you're trying something new. You want to try to get some race pace back, but it's something that just really didn't work for them this weekend. They strategically took themselves out of the race so much that by lap 43, it was a Ferrari versus McLaren kind of race. Ferrari needed to do a tire conservation. They needed to keep those tires in best condition that they possibly could for as long as they possibly could. McLaren at this point, it's lap 43 of 53. You got 10 laps left. You literally have to go all out without causing a crash, without running into each other, without absolutely pooching your car. And it was close by the end, but it wasn't close at the same time. So instead of teasing around it, let's just get right into it. Top 10, we're going to go from 10 to 1, and then you're going to find out who wins. Alex Albon finishes in the top 10, finally gets another point for Williams. Congratulations. Kevin Magnussen in 9th, Perez in 8th, Russell 7th, Max Verstappen in 6th, Hamilton in 5th, Carlos Sainz in 4th, Lando Norris in 3rd, Oscar Piastri in 2nd, and Leclerc ends up holding out. He wins the Italian Grand Prix in Monza. Leclerc, he had that tire management down to a T, and he wasn't letting off the gas. At one point, he did have a 6-second lead. By the time he was done, Piastri had almost caught up. It was within the 2-second range, but Leclerc's tire life, his tire management was second to none this race. It was absolutely amazing. You could see him still taking the curbs, but not nearly as hard as he would normally. Still taking the straightaways as fast as he possibly could within the realm of reality where he knows his tires are not happy, but he still needs to manage to get them across the line. Oscar Piastri, he just ran out of time. Give him another 3 laps, he would have caught Leclerc and he would have passed him. He was just flat out. He had brand new mediums. And no, brand new hards. He had brand new hards, really good tire life, and he was just going for it. He outraced Lando Norris. The only reason why he outraced Lando Norris is because when that first pass at the beginning of the race, he was just able to keep that momentum. He was able to keep that killer instinct, really good driver instinct, didn't take the curbs really wide, no gravel, straight concentration, and that's why they still end up almost totally catching the podium, second and third, which is fantastic. I do think Lando Norris ended up getting the fastest lap as well, if I'm not mistaken, but McLaren really, really, really showing their dominance. It would have been more dominant if they had gotten the strategy right, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Drivers' championships. Max Verstappen still in the lead, but that lead is not that big anymore. Let's talk about it. First, 1 to 10, Max Verstappen with 303 points. Lando Norris is in second with 241 points. Leclerc with 217. Piastri with 197. Carlos Sainz in fifth with 184. Lewis Hamilton is in sixth with 164 points. Perez is in seventh with 143. George Russell is making a run for it. He's in eighth with 128 points. Fernando Alonso is in ninth with 50 points, and Lance Stroll is still holding on the 10th with 24 points. The Constructors' Championships, Red Bull, 446 points. You ready for this? McLaren is in second, 438. Ferrari's in third with 407. Mercedes is in fourth with 292. Massive, massive drop-off after there. Aston Martin's in fifth with 74 points. VCAR is in sixth with 34. Haas is in seventh with 28 points. Alpine is in eighth with 13. Williams is in ninth with 6 points. And good old Kick Sauber, unfortunately, is holding up the house. They are still in the basement with 0 points whatsoever. Let's talk about the Constructors' Championship points. They are so, so freaking close. It's an 8-point difference with 8 races left. The way that Red Bull is driving, unless they do something super drastic, unless they knock a bunch of parts off, put some old parts on, and pray to the racing gods, McLaren, in my opinion, will beat Red Bull in the next race, and they will take over the Constructors' Championship in Azerbaijan, which is the next race. They're in Qatar next. This is going to happen, whether it's next race, 2 races next, however many races down the road, this is going to happen by the end of the season. Again, unless Red Bull pulls out something magical. Max gets first and Perez actually does what he's trained to do, that he is paid to do, and that's actually support his teammate and support his team and get points on the board. McLaren's going to destroy them. Drivers' championships, on the other hand, Max has got a little bit more of a lead. He can nurse that for another 8 races as long as he keeps getting in the top 5. Top five only, Max will be able to hold on to the drivers' championships. It won't hurt if he gets a couple of first place finishes. It also won't help if he gets a couple of fastest lap points as well. But again, not just Lando Norris, but Oscar Piastri, both of these guys, they are a force to be reckoned with. They're taking fastest laps. They're taking top 5 finishes. Hell, they're taking top 3 finishes. It's a little bit more of a stretch that Norris passes Verstappen by the end for the drivers, but unless something, again, drastically changes, I can realistically see by the end of the season that McLaren will win the Constructors and they will win the Drivers' Championships by the end of the season. All right, so how did we get to this point? Well, here comes the story of the race. How do we get to such a close point differential by the end of the Italian Grand Prix? Well, it all came right down to strategy. One strategy really didn't make a whole lot of sense, and one strategy could have been negated if they actually thought for a half a second and if the driver wasn't so willing to say yes. So let's talk about Red Bull. Their strategy, they started on hards. It's a good idea. That part makes sense. It's really, really, really good. What doesn't make sense is the 2 other pit stops after that. They go from hard to hard. So you still automatically have to make another pit stop because you've gone from one compound to the same compound a second time. That doesn't count as 2 compounds. Obviously, he went from hard to hard. He's in the lead at some point. Max is in the lead after the pit stops, and they put him on a set of hards. Maybe they didn't think that the mediums would last long enough. Maybe they thought they could eke out, you know, he's in clean air. Maybe he was able to eke out a longer time between, it's 23 seconds for a pit stop. Maybe they thought he'd have enough lead time that he'd do a pit stop and still be able to fight back for the lead. absolutely 100% didn't happen. There's something going on with the strategy and something going on with the car. When he's in open air on hards on a track like this, where hards are the way to go, he's not making any time. He was actually losing some time. There has to be an issue with the car or maybe even the power unit itself. Something had to have gone wrong for them and they just don't want to share it. So you go from hard to hard and then you have to pit again to go to mediums. By the time he went to mediums, he was making up some time, but the race was so out of their hands at this point. He just needed to try to either keep his spot, which he did, or maybe try and catch Hamilton to get fifth spot. Hamilton, he was nowhere close to Max. They were nowhere near each other. He wouldn't have caught him by the end of the race. It was kind of like banging your head against the wall, hoping for a wonderful change of situation. On the flip side, McLaren, good team strategy. We were all hunky-dory all the way up until the end of the race, where Oscar Piastri is on a set of hearts. It's working for him. He can go to the end of the race. The tires are feeling good. There's no degradation. He's loving this. They tell him to pit again. They give him a second pit stop. I don't understand why. He would have caught Leclerc if he didn't make the pit stop. He would have won the race. So what had happened was when he's in the lead, Leclerc is in front just because how the pit stops went, and they make him pit again. This doesn't make sense. Now you're just giving Ferrari that lead. Leclerc starts fourth. He finishes first because you decide to give Oscar Piastri another pit stop for absolutely no reason. They gave Ferrari the win at this point. Maybe they thought that Leclerc's tires would absolutely 100% fall off the cliff. Maybe one would pop. Maybe he would lose control. I don't know what it was, but they just thought that Piastri with newer tires would be able to catch up. And it didn't happen. They underestimated how much Leclerc, A, wanted the race. They underestimated, B, how well Ferrari would put their car together for this race. And they just totally underestimated the tire degradation that the Ferrari would actually have by the end of the race. Those two, the story of the races, I don't understand either of them. Things to go back to the drawing board for both teams, more Red Bull than McLaren. It's just a simple, hey, next time for McLaren, when you're in this situation, let's not pit him. It's kind of that simple. If Piastri's in the position that he's in, he's feeling well, he's got the pace, the tires are great, don't fuck with it. Folks, that is the Italian Grand Prix roundup. A fantastic race, very entertaining. It generally isn't this entertaining, but because of the new track surface and the longer DRS zones and just how the drivers are this season, it was a fantastic race. I loved watching it. I do highly recommend that if you missed it, try and find it on F1 TV if they've got replays on TV, or if you just recorded it because you weren't able to watch it or you didn't want to get up that early, I do highly recommend that you watch it. Normally, this is where I tell you about the next race, but I've got some breaking news for you. This is the first time since 2014, since this rule was implemented, that a driver has actually been punished for it. What am I talking about? Kevin Magnussen was called up to the stewards after his causing a collision 10-second points or 10-second penalty. When causing a collision and you get an automatic 10-second penalty, that adds 2 points to your supercar license. Kevin Magnussen was already sitting on 10 points. This gives him 12. Which means Kevin Magnussen is the first driver since 2014 to actually be suspended for a race due to too many points on his license. Haas does not need this. They really don't. They're on momentum. They could potentially catch VCAR for points. They could get sixth. You don't need one of your drivers being suspended for an entire race. So what does this mean? Who's going to be Kevin Magnussen's replacement? Rumors are, and I'm pretty sure they're going to confirm this today, that Ollie Bearman is going to come back and fill in that spot for a one race at the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. Now, when this suspension takes place, Kevin Magnussen will all of a sudden have all of his points wiped off his license. Doesn't really help him much. He doesn't have a seat for next year. It was a collision that didn't need to happen. He was not under control. He didn't need to run into Daniel Ricciardo. It was kind of a wasted set of 2 points, and he's just hurting his team. Now he still gets his points from the race, but now he has to miss the second one. Not the second one, he has to miss the next race. So after all this, all that's all said and done, what is the next race? It is September 13th and 15th. It is the Qatar Grand Prix, I should say, in Azerbaijan. This one's a little bit early for us, folks. Thursday, race weekend warm up 5:30 a.m. Friday, full practice 1 is at 3:30. Full practice 2 is at 7 a.m. Saturday, full practice 3 is at 2:30 in the morning. Pre-race is at pre-qualifying is at 5. Qualifying is at 6 a.m. Race day pre-race is 4 a.m. if you'd like to watch that. Race is 5 a.m. and the post-race ceremonies, interviews, and all that jazz are at 7 a.m. It's going to be a little early to watch this, folks. So I highly recommend that you record and watch with a nice cup of coffee and some breakfast on the couch. Qatar is always a fantastic race. Not one of my favorites, but it is always entertaining. Lots of passing and lots of drama. And with that, folks, I would like to send out a fantastic thank you very much for tuning in to a new episode of F101. And until next time, keep those tires spinning and keep the revs high. See you on the racetrack.